I sure hope you're hungry.
Ooh, I'm starving.
Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax. Today we have an episode on passkeys. This is kind of an interesting one. It's one of those things, like, I've been hearing about it for 6 months, and I sort of sat down the other day and went through it, both as like a technical user, as somebody who likes to understand what's happening with password and password management, as well as like a developer who probably will have to implement this thing into the platforms that we use in the next little while. So this is going to be an awesome one. We have Anna Poblitz on. She is the CTO of Passkeys, which is a, what do you call it, Anna? Like, it's a part of 1Password?
Yeah. So I was the CTO of Passage, which was a passwordless company that was acquired by 1Password. Now We sort of operate as a business line within 1Password that's a separate product from, you know, the password manager that everyone knows about.
Awesome. Yeah. So it seems like 1Password is sort of charging ahead with a lot of this passkey things. And I'm going to just start it off real quick and sort of talk about why I think we need passkeys, and then we'll get into what it is. And essentially, it's like a passwordless future, which I'm pretty excited about. And the reason why I'm really excited about is because, like, for me, I use 1Password. I use 2-factor authentication. And my life is in pretty good shape with that type of stuff. But you know who doesn't is literally everybody else in my life that's not super as technical as I am, right? We talk about normal people on this podcast quite a bit. And normal people don't use 2-factor authentication. Normal people don't use backup keys. Or if they do, they email them to themselves. Normal people, well, a lot of people do use password managers, but I think most people still don't use a password manager. And what ends up happening is they get locked out. They don't want to use 2-factor. And then you start seeing like places like my bank. My bank does not support 2-factor authentication.
Really?
In terms of like the thing. Well, you have it does, but they have to text you. And we all know there's SIM swapping and all that type of stuff. So, and I guarantee the bank doesn't want to do it. You probably have more insight than I do, but bank doesn't want to do it because, like, what happens if you get locked out? Then you got to like verify that this person is right, and you got to send a picture of your passport, and like that can be spoofed really easily, and it's just a nightmare. So I think passkeys, like, you know what people do have is they have a phone in their pocket, and they have a laptop with a fingerprint reader or a Windows Hello on it, and passkeys is I think going to be the replacement for 2-factor auth in making things very, very secure. So welcome, Anna. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, excited to be here. And I totally agree. We can replace multi-factor. We can replace passwords, all of it.
Awesome. Well, let's start there. What are passkeys?
Yeah, so at a really high level, passkeys are just a new way to log in to apps and websites that is fully passwordless. The idea is that passkeys are both more secure and they're more user-friendly than passwords, which is a really big win on both of those departments, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before we talk about like sort of the technical in and outs of how they work, I think it can be helpful to kind of go back to like the beginning of why passkeys. Like, why do we even need a new way to log in? What's wrong with passwords? And I think, you know, no one likes passwords. No one's like, this is how I want to log into my apps and websites for eternity. But I think it really comes down to the fact that it puts all of the burden on a user to be secure, right? Even like if you use a password manager, it's a little bit better for sure. But, you know, my mom doesn't, despite the fact that I work for a password manager. And so she has to think up her passwords and remember good ones and, you know, hopefully not write them down on a piece of paper. So all of the work is on like you as a person to make sure you're being secure with passwords. And so the goal with passkeys is to remove that like human element, that human error from logging into apps and websites by giving you this experience where the security is just built straight into the technology. So back to kind of what it is and how it works, when you use a passkey to log into a website, it's really just going to look and feel like you're unlocking your device. It's going to be your Face ID, your Touch ID, your Windows Hello, maybe a YubiKey if you're one of the rare people who use those in your day-to-day life. And then behind the scenes, what's happening is passkeys are built on public key cryptography, which has been around for a really long time. It's the basis for a lot of other technologies that we all use in our day-to-day life, even if we don't realize it. And so when a user creates an account with a new website, a unique private and public key are generated. The private key is stored securely on the user's device and it never leaves. And then the public key is stored on the website server and it can be used to like verify login actions down the road. And so your device can cryptographically sign a login attempts on future logins. The server can verify it. And then the sensitive private part of your login experience is never sent to the server. It never goes anywhere where someone could then like hack a website database and dump a whole bunch of private keys. And so you're getting a lot of really great security benefits out of this, but you also get that great end user experience where someone's just doing their Face ID and then all of this magic happens behind the scenes.
Mm. Wow. Many developers out there in their careers have fired up like a virtual private server at some point and done the step-by-step on DigitalOcean of setting up a public key. So is this technology just a much user-friendlier wrapper around that same existing technology?
It is. It's really similar. So the idea is like, You get a little passkey prompt up on your device, and it's saying, do you want to create a passkey for this website? You say yes, it's generating a key pair. It is signing a challenge and then sending that to the server with a public key, which can be used to verify it. And it's just doing that over and over again every time you log in. And then you're unlocking access to that private key with your Face ID or Touch ID or PIN cool. for your phone. It looks like you're sending your biometrics to a website, but you're not. I think that's a really important like privacy fact to touch on. Is it's really just unlocking access to a totally random private key that lives on your device.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, that misinformation is certainly something that you have to battle, I'm sure. Like every now and then, like the other day, Apple came out with the where you touch two iPhones together and you're allowed to share your contact info. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I saw all these TikToks of people being like, hey, everyone, disable it. You leave your phone in the gym. Someone can come close in it and they can download all your data.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, there's no chance that's how it works. But there's like a million people in the replies being like, thank you, just turned it off. So you got to like, I'm really glad that you're doing that because, like, this might be our last chance to get people to stop using the same password on everything, right?
Yeah, like, that's just the reality. And even if I use 1Password and I have great passwords, I don't know what any of them are, they're long, they're random, there's still the chance that the website isn't properly protecting those passwords. And there's nothing that I, as a user, can do to, like, prevent that breach scenario from happening. But with passkeys, I have a different key pair for every single website. The data that the website has is just a public key. It can in no way be used to compromise my account, to impersonate me. It can't be reused on other websites. Like, you're getting a lot of these things that users just didn't really have control over before, which is also a really big win over passwords.
So in like the username password whole thing is that like the website obviously stores your password or stores a hash of your password. And then you submit the password to them and you hope that they don't console log the password while they're debugging it because then text of it. But the idea, if anyone hasn't done it before, the idea is that you run the text of the user's password through like a hashing algorithm and then you check, okay, is the hash the same as the one as I have on file? And if those hashes ever get out, you can't really reverse them.
Yeah, I think that's important to note, Wes, is that hashing is one way, right? You can't decrypt a hash in that regard. So it's not like you can compare the hashes, but you can't decrypt them.
Yeah, but WordPress uses MD5, and somebody has figured out every string in the world of the MD5, right? Like if you find an MD5 string, you just Google it, and there will be a website that says, this is the hash of something. So like, obviously you can salt them and change them and whatnot, but I thought that's kind of interesting.
Now, I was going to say, it's relatively inexpensive to guess a bunch of passwords and check hashes if you have a giant list of them. And so that attack path has become just very common, very easy to do once you have a giant list. So websites like have to find better ways to protect their passwords, ideally just by not having them at all.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, you know, I think leaving this up to the users to put the security on the user themselves, it's always going to be a failing, because even if somebody, you know, it thinks they're being secure, there's like, you have to take a master's level course on how to write a password that can't be hacked, right? You have to use words. You have to use words that are unrelated. You can't just swap zeros for O's because the algorithms are too complex these days. It really feels like this solves so many of the problems related to here. What took everybody so long to get to here?
That is honestly a fair question. Like the amount of rules that are around passwords now, like I remember I was making an account for something maybe like a year ago and I was like, okay, you know, I'm generating a random password in 1Password and that didn't meet the requirements. So I was like, let me go look and see. And it was something like you couldn't have consecutive letters or the same letter too many times in a row or consecutive numbers in a row. And I was like, I can't even think of a password that meets all these requirements. This is crazy.
I'm trying to think, like, private key, public key. If somebody gets your private key, someone, you leave your laptop open, you go to the washroom, someone runs in and
somebody bumps your iPhone with another.
Yeah, cat / SSH. At that point, your private key is as good as a password, right? Like then somebody could sign it in. So like, where's the two-factor part? Is that the key is then stored behind an additional layer on your device?
Exactly. So the idea is that it's sort of something you have and something you are. You have to both have access to the device where that pass key is stored, and you have to be able to use the PIN or the Face ID in order to unlock that device. So even if someone had your phone, they can't unlock your phone, and so they don't have access to those things. So you kind of have that extra layer of protection there. What I'm seeing a lot is that people will initially introduce passkeys as a second form of authentication, especially as people kind of get more used to this. You'll have a password and then you can let people upgrade to passkeys, say, or maybe use it in addition. And you can have it as sort of a risk-based way to check authentication on top of maybe a normal password.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Because like with two-factor authentication, it was something you know, which is your password, and something you have, which is your token?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. That makes
sense.
Yeah,
so it's very similar to that, but it is all in one place, which I think makes people a little bit nervous sometimes, or you know, maybe it's not really two-factor authentication, but I also think at some point comparing it to two-factor authentication is a little bit trying to force passkeys into a framework that we already know and talk about, when really it's just sort of outside of that and a lot better than a password plus an SMS token, because it's also totally phishing resistant, which is something we haven't talked about. And like, there's all these other things you get kind of outside of just something you know and something you have and something you are, and like those sort of standard factors of authentication we're used to talking about.
So now that you've mentioned being phishing resistant, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think that the biggest thing here is that like there is no thing to phish, right? Like the most common scenario you'll get with a phishing attack is someone sending you an email. They're telling you to go put your credentials into some website, some lookalike website, say, and then they're going to proxy those onto the real site and like, compromise your account. That's a really common method, right? And it's certainly becoming more prevalent. Like AI articles talk about this all the time, like how realistic these emails are getting, how you can impersonate people's voices now and their faces on Zoom. Yeah. Like, how do I even know it's really you guys that I'm talking to? Like, you can do all of this impersonation. And so, of course, people are going to fall for those, but there is no like password to give up. So if I were to say like receive an email that's facebook.com, but with a zero, so it's like some lookalike Facebook site. If I go there, my passkey actually won't work. It's like tied to a domain. It's tied to facebook.com. And there will be no way for me at like a device level to even like use that passkey on that website. And so you're protected from this whole suite of phishing attacks that are based on like credential stealing or like lookalike sites. Like that whole class of phishing attack kind of goes away. It just sort of becomes irrelevant, as do most other like common credential attacks. So brute forcing, credential stuffing, all the things that you hear about that are really like widespread internet attacks. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things just aren't really relevant in a passkey world.
A lot of people are probably asking right now, okay, what happens if you lose your phone? You know, what's the story there?
The main thing I haven't really mentioned about passkeys is that there was actually like a precursor to passkeys. It's called WebAuthn. It's the protocol that underlies passkey technology. And up until, I think it's like 2.5 years ago, WebAuthn was strictly tied to a device. The private key was in the TPM of your device. It was in a YubiKey, like a hardware key, and you could not get it out. It was on that device. If you lost your device, you were just kind of out of luck. Mm. And so passkeys were the attempt of primarily the major platforms, Google, Microsoft, Apple, to make this a little bit more accessible, especially for regular consumers, by taking those passkeys, those WebAuthn credentials, and syncing them across your different devices through their platform accounts. So your iCloud account, your keychain can store your passkeys, or your Google account can store your passkeys, or more recently, your 1Password account can store your passkeys. And within those cases, you're already syncing all of your other credentials across your different devices. And so we can do the same for passkeys and make them a little bit easier. And so this problem of like, I lost my phone, what do I do? Well, you're already going to have to recover your iCloud account or your 1Password account or whatever the case is. And so those keys can live in there the same way your passwords or other things do.
Nice. Yeah. And that will happen. I mean, I know I had a buddy of mine in college. He had it's like audio plugins at the time. And it was a kind of a precursor to a YubiKey, but the licenses were all stored on a flash drive. And somebody stole his computer, his laptop, along with the flash drive that was plugged into it, thinking it was just a flash drive. And then he had to call, 40 different companies. Half of them won't, reimburse his license. And he was just like, I just wish they would have just taken the computer, Not all my keys.
Take the computer, leave the flash drive.
Leave my keys, please. You won't do anything with them. Yeah.
And if someone's not, look, you know what? There's no chance I'm putting my private keys in the cloud, no matter how much they tell me it's encrypted. You can also just say, all right, well, I have my MacBook, I got my phone, and I have my iPad. All three of those things could sign in. And like, there's a demo on the Passage website that you can sign in with the passkey. So I signed in there, and then I went over to my a different device and tried it as well. So you can set multiple devices as well, right? So if you lose one, you go, oh shoot, let me go immediately to my computer, remove that device, but you can still access it because there's,
you're saying
you can
have more than keys?
One, correct? Yeah, you can have multiple private keys, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I actually really recommend this. So like for me, for example, I have a Mac computer, but I use an Android phone. Mm. And so those are in different ecosystems. So I have my 1Password on both, so I can sync them that way. But if you take a password manager out of the equation, I can't share an iCloud passkey with my Google account. Like those aren't syncing. And so what I find is helpful for me is for a website I'm using a passkey, I'll typically have one on each device. Like I'll save some backup passkeys on different devices just to make sure that I can do a recovery scenario that doesn't involve buying a whole new device and loading my iCloud account onto it. We also encourage websites to have recovery options as well, which so having it from the website side and from the end user side, I think is really helpful to improve that story. But what I've actually found overall is that passkeys actually reduce support requests rather than increase them. And so if you're doing it well and you're encouraging people to have backup passkeys and syncing them across these platforms, it's actually really a much easier experience and like fewer people lose them than, forget their password, for example.
Yeah. Well, and in that case, like let's say they did need to recover through a recovery process. What does that process even look like? Is it similar to the send an email with an authenticated string in the email?
It would probably depend on the website and like what they're comfortable with. But that's something we see most commonly is it'll just kind of look like your normal forgot password flow. And then you just add a new passkey.
Cool.
Very similar sort of magic link, something like that. If, you have a higher risk application, you could even force that they enroll multiple passkeys at the website level and then don't give them other backup options. You could require other like support interactions for higher security. But for most consumer use cases, which is what I think about most of the time, then yeah, usually an email is fine.
Cool.
Interesting. I always think about that, but what if your email account also is behind a passkey? Like they could also do the print out 10 different recovery tokens, right? Like that's a pretty common thing right now. And I was listening to like a Bitcoin podcast the other day where a guy got robbed, and he said he had his recovery keys in his email, which makes absolutely no sense, but or people throw them in their Dropbox and then all of a sudden they're in one spot. So like, yeah, I guess you could just like print them off and put them in a safe or go put them in a different location, your parents' house or something.
Yeah. I do think you make a fair point though. Like at some point you have to have one account that isn't a passkey, right? Your iCloud account. If that's the place you're storing all of your passkeys, how do you get into your iCloud mm-hmm. account, right? There's sort of this, a little bit of a chicken and egg problem in some cases of what is your like final root of trust, I think, in like yeah. the place that you store everything. So, you know, for me, that's my 1Password account. All my passkeys for my websites are there, but then the passkey I use to unlock 1Password is, you know, a Mac or an Android or whatever the case is, it's that kind of passkey. And so it's a little bit different where you kind of have to like all these services want to support passkeys, but you still need a platform account or some cross-platform thing like a password manager to ultimately give you all access to all of that.
Do you think there's any kind of solution there, or is that like just a problem that will remain a problem?
Probably. I would love to think about it sort of as more like device authentication gives you access to all of these passkeys by default. And because of the way 1Password works, for example, you know, I have to sign into 1Password, but if there's a way to almost bring that access a level up where it's you're logging into your laptop and that's directly tied into 1Password login, mm-hmm. that would be really cool. And it would certainly would make it feel a lot more seamless regardless of what the authentication method is.
That was my concern. Before I moved all my two-factor auth into 1Password, I was always like, that doesn't make any sense because then you're putting your password and your authenticator keys in one spot and you're just, it's in the name. It's 1Password.
Yeah, that's 1Factor.
And then people
now.
Said, yeah, but people had to explain to me, no, Wes, in order for you to get into your 1Password, you need two factors. You need your 1Password and you need maybe another device that you're currently logged into. You need a backup code. There's a whole bunch of different ways that you could possibly do it. But even if I were to give somebody my 1Password master password, unless they broke into my house or kidnapped me or something like that, they wouldn't be able to get in there, right? So whatever it is that's holding your passkey still needs to have ideally two factors, right?
Exactly. And so like you know, 1Password is ultimately a security tool, but it's really like a productivity tool. Mm-hmm. And that's really what people use it for. And so it has to be secure enough that we can mm-hmm. let people put all of these different things in there and that we have the trust to be able to protect those. Otherwise, it's just another security tool that people don't really want to use. They're not fully using because it's too hard to use. And so that like productivity usability aspect is so important.
Yeah, there really nothing beats when you fire up a new device. You can do a fresh install. And like the very first thing I do is install 1Password. Because it is
yes.
the gateway to everything else on my device, which makes it honestly so much easier to re-log into any of your services. Not that this is an ad for 1Password, but Wes and I have both been using it for a long time. So a lot of personal feelings there.
Yeah.
I love to hear it.
One thing that I asked on Twitter, people's thoughts on passkeys, and a couple people said, it's great because you can store them on your iPhone, in your iCloud, but if you lose access to your iCloud account, then you're simply just a SIM swap away from getting access to that type of thing. And a lot of people are like, yeah, then that's a weak point. But somebody swooped in and said, that's only for like a small amount of people who only have one Apple device. And I think they said something like 80% of iPhone users have at least one more device that can be used as a second factor. And in that case, it doesn't go text message route. Is that true?
Yeah, I bet that's probably true from a percentage wise. And like having a backup device certainly enables this whole recovery process to be way, way easier. And I think, you know, I've talked about is how great they are. Here's all the attacks they prevent with passwords. And like the reality is there will also be attacks against passkeys, right? Mm-hmm. But if you think about where we're starting right now, like the bar is so high with passkeys and we're like moving that bar so far that yeah, there's going to be these new attacks, but the good thing is that rather than like widespread internet attacks against passwords where you're just like guessing a whole bunch of passwords on a bunch of websites, it's going to have to be really targeted. And so things like SIM swapping or having physical access to a device, like that is an attack path and that's fair, but it's really narrow and much smaller and really hard for an attacker to do to a million users all at once, right? And so, yeah, we're gonna have to figure out how to solve some of those problems, but the bar's so low right now with passwords that we can get so much improvement from the current state really, really quickly.
The bar's really low.
It is.
The reality is that most people reuse their password on every, like, so I came up with this little exercise. I just wanna rattle through it because I think it's kind of interesting. Is somebody on Twitter the other day was like, why does Buffalo Wild Wings is forcing me to do two-factor auth? And they're like, in what world do I need to secure my Wild Wing points to get free wings? And I thought, that's hilarious. But like, first of all, I had a grocery card thing. I had my points stolen once, right? It was probably 10 years ago. I was reusing a password and somebody tried it. They got in and they took like $200 worth of points. So I had to get in contact with it. They went and spent that immediately. So $200 out the grocery store's pocket. Then they needed to reimburse me $200. So that's $400 out of their pocket already. And then like they had to pay someone to figure it out, all of that support. And I'm sure accounting has this weird, like, you just created money out of nowhere because you duplicated the amount of points that were earned. So now accounting has to do it. Like, and I probably caused like $500 worth of damage to that grocery store by me reusing a password. You know, that's it's why your crazy. Wild Wings needs a two-factor auth.
And you are you, Wes. You're a technical person. Imagine the average cost of the average user. I think that the scariest thing I ever did to my own family was introduce them to Have I Been Pwned, to search their email in the databases to see where their passwords have, showed up. If you haven't done this, this is a really interesting exercise and luckily something that 1Password does for you with Watchtower in a really nice way. But you can just type in your password and see just how many times your email appears in paste bins or data breaches or anything where people have your password for whatever site you use there. And then subsequently, any site you used that password for afterwards, it's very disturbing.
Yeah. You know, Christmas is coming up. So if you're looking for a fun family activity, you can all do that together.
That's
and
when I
see
did
how
it.
Much you reuse your passwords.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think to Wes's point about Buffalo Wild Wings, like, first of all, that's hilarious that they use MFA. I would never expect that.
Funny, yeah.
And I think that's a really, obviously a common theme in like e-commerce companies or anything that's like retail based. They really don't want to make you log in very often because that slows you down. It prevents people from checking out and buying stuff. And you're like actually losing money on that. And so for that reason, like any company like that isn't typically, except in Buffalo Wild Wings case, going to want to add something like two-factor. But if you can use something like passkeys that are actually like faster, easier than passwords, then you can get the level of security that you're looking for to protect all your wing points. But you don't have to like worry about all of this friction and like users trying to like all the support costs associated when the account gets hacked. Like you don't have to deal with any of that stuff. And so I think when we think about, you know, I think I've been hearing things like passwords are dead for probably 20 years now, right? That's not a new statement, but I think that's why passkeys are different. Before it was always like, we have email links and OTP codes now, or we have some sort of proprietary biometric solution, but all of those things either like are a lot of friction for the users or they're not a meaningful security step up the way that passkeys are. And I think having both of those things together are like the reason it could actually happen right now. And the reason why e-commerce retail companies actually could see a lot of benefit here from problems they already face that are outside of security. And I think that's like really, really cool to think about.
That's a really good point. I didn't even think about it. It's like Apple Pay for logging in, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
It is like literally that. And like, how great is that experience? Like, you don't have to have an extra thing. You don't have to check your email. It just happens.
Go get the card out and type the numbers in. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a really good point. I never even thought about that. Like, it's going to help online sales because it reduces friction.
Yeah, I hate having to check out as a guest because I have to type all my information in again. But I also don't really want to make an account on this random site because then I have another password to think about.
Mm. Yeah.
And so it kind of like marries those two things where it feels simple, but you can also like save all of your information.
Wow.
Let's talk about the actual tech behind it now. So I don't even know if I mentioned this, but like passkeys is not a one password or passage thing. Passkeys is an open standard, right?
Correct.
And what are the standards that go behind that? I know there's several that sort of have come together.
Yeah. So typically you'll hear things about like WebAuthn or this like overarching protocol that underlies passkeys. And there's two parts to that. There's sort of the browser or client to device side, and then there's the like web server side of this. And it's a lot more complicated than passwords, unfortunately. So you have this client side where a browser or a mobile app has to interact with some APIs in order to actually create and store those pass keys in the device, in the TPM or in your iCloud account keychain. You know, you have to have those sorts of APIs. Then you also have to have like pass key management on the web server. This part has to like store public keys, verify login actions. It has to manage this idea that a single user is going to have a lot of different credentials. I think this is really different than in a password world. You have like one user, one password across every device, right? But with passkeys, you have one user and they can have N number of devices and passkeys, and you have to like manage those relationships. And it's a lot more complicated. So you sort of have these two sides of implementation. What I typically find is that there's a lot of resources for one specific part of that. Like if you're an Android or an iOS developer, there'll be really good docs for how to do the client side of that and how to go implement those APIs. And there might be a really great Go library that talks about how to do the passkey management and verification on the server side. But there's very few like really complete comprehensive guides of how to do all of this things in one place, and like how to connect all the dots and how to manage the edge cases around different browsers and their implementations. And that's where I find it really gets complicated once you kind of get past those initial implementations, like what are all the stuff that's left around the edges.
How I found you was I was Googling for, which is like, if you are ever thinking about doing a tutorial, and you think, no one's going to watch this. I Googled for tutorials on how to implement passkeys in JavaScript, and Anna's video came up first. I was like, who is this? And like, it didn't say your name anywhere. So I was just like, and then I saw it said Anna in the top right-hand corner of your Mac. So I started doing a bunch of research into like, I was like, who made this video? We need to have them on. And then I was surprised that like, you work for Passage and obviously not even work, CTO. So that's an aside, but make videos, everybody.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad it was useful.
And there was only like, there's a couple hundred views on it. It wasn't very popular because just by viewing that, I was like, we got to talk about this. I don't think enough people are talking about passkeys just yet.
I think that's a good indication that not enough people are talking about passkeys just yet, because I think that's the type of thing that you'll see start to blow up, because you don't really hear people talk about them. And I think you will. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think it's on us developers to try to start to implement them into our application. So I saw Amazon, unfortunately, Amazon.com, not Amazon Canada, has implemented them into their application. Do you know offhand any other major players who have implemented them?
I do. We actually, here's another shameless plug a little early. We have a website called passkeys.directory, which is just a site we maintain of all of the different websites and apps that we know about that have passkey support. It could be a sign-in, it could be multi-factor. We kind of track all of them. So Amazon's a big one. Some like Best Buy and eBay have actually had it for a really long time, which is interesting. Coinbase, CVS, like a lot of really interesting like consumer applications have support for passkeys, which has been really cool. But what I've found is that typically they're not usually the primary form of authentication, right? They're, maybe you can go to the profile settings and dig and find it and go at it, but they're not really putting it front and center, which is a bummer. And I think it's something that is kind of slowing, like I think we need to figure out, that's a problem we need to solve in order to really speed up adoption, is how can we make it front and center in a way that people are comfortable with and that they're willing to try it without like hurting conversions, of course. Kayak.com is actually one of the few that does do a pretty like passkey first login experience. If you use Kayak, go try it out.
Oh, cool.
You know, I've been seeing in Wes, and I know you use 1Password. If you're out there, if you go to the Watchtower, there is a passkeys available, and it'll tell you how many of the passwords in your 1Password have a passkey available. And I can see it is obviously like GitHub, Nintendo, AWS, TikTok. I have like 35 or something. So
you guys have some passkeys to go, man.
That's Nintendo exactly what I am intending on doing. I'm wondering about, like, you know, you mentioned a little bit about whether it is the main login or a supplemental or second factor or anything like that. I'm wondering about the UI for stuff like this, because oftentimes, even as I've been clicking on some of these, let's say I added a passkey for Synology. I went to Synology's website. When I went to log in, it still is prompting me for a username and password. And the only indication that I can do a passkey to log in is that one password pops up. Is that typically how the UIs are seen? Is that the device understands that there's a passkey situation here, or do we see this implemented in different ways?
So there's a lot of different ways. I'll tell you what I kind of think is best. And this is based on obviously a lot of research through Passage, because basically what our product is a whole web component custom element you can put in your website that does all of these login flows for you based on our research and kind of guides users through it. So my general recommendation is that it doesn't need to be the first form of authentication, though I love it if it is. That's great. If you feel confident going fully passwordless, awesome. If you don't, maybe you have millions and millions of users right now and you have a password-based login scheme, what I typically recommend is saying, like, okay, when users log in the next time, prompt them and offer them to add a passkey. Ask if they want to add that. And then going forward, you want to track users who have passkeys. And if they do, you want to offer that as their first option for sign-in. And then if they don't have it, or they hit cancel, or they can't find their passkey, they can always log in with their password and they have that backup method. But you want to be like slowly nudging people towards that passkey experience, because it's the only way you're really going to get any adoption or like learn anything from that experience is if you kind of put it front and center. And what we found is that this came up in the FIDO Alliance does a lot of interesting UX research around this as well. And one thing they found was that you want to prompt people to use passkeys in moments where they're already doing like account related tasks. So say someone's resetting their password, that's a really great time to offer to add a passkey for them, because they are already like kind of annoyed about using a password and they already like had trouble with it. Now's a great time to add a passkey, right? And so finding the right times to do that and also the right language to use is really, really important. I think what you'll see if you go set up 30 websites with passkeys on them is that everyone calls them something different. They use slightly different language. And you might not even realize that it's actually the same technology behind the scenes if we hadn't like had this conversation about it. And so I think all of these websites need to kind of settle on a consistent UI, a consistent like conversation around passkeys and the words we use and how we talk about them. And that'll make it a lot easier for regular people to say, like, oh yeah, I've done this on Home Depot, so now when I go do it on eBay, I know it's the same. Like, this is cool. I like this way of logging in. But I don't really feel like it's there quite yet. And so I think that's an area we have a lot of work to do on.
Yeah, I noticed that immediately. I noticed that Synology said passwordless, and the word passkey was not to be found anywhere.
Oh, passwordless is nice. Or like, even just like log in with Face ID or log in with this device. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, that's really common. You know, log in with your device, log in with biometrics. Like all of those, especially for companies that maybe implemented passkeys a while ago, that's a much more like common phrasing. The term passkeys is actually pretty new, maybe like a year and a half ago. And so before that, it was like log in with WebAuthn or a security key or like something kind of scary sounding, right? You had to have a YubiKey to do it. But it's the same protocol. Most of those websites support passkeys as well. You just might not know about it.
And if you're signing into something on your desktop, but your key is on your phone, part of the spec is a way to transmit that via Bluetooth or other protocols, right?
Exactly. So if they're both, say, in the iOS ecosystem, they'll just exist automatically in your keychain. Okay. But in the case like I have an Android and an Apple device. And so if I want to log in on my desktop Apple device with a passkey that's only on my Android, typically I'll get like a QR code pop up that I'll scan, and that will activate my passkey from my Android phone, which I can then say like, oh, actually, I do want my passkey on my iOS or my Apple device as well. So let me go ahead and add that too. And that's like how you would go ahead and like bootstrap other devices typically.
That's beautiful.
So it's kind of like that recovery set up multiple device type of flow.
All right. So back to implementing it into your own platform. So I have an application, React front end, Node.js back end. That is totally something that you can implement this 100% yourself, right? However, you can also use a service, just like Auth is right now, right? You can do Auth entirely yourself. Username, password's pretty simple, but once you start getting into OAuth or multi-factor or sign in with Twitter, it gets a little bit more complicated. So that's where Passage would come in, right? It's a bunch of APIs for working with it.
Exactly. So yeah, like password, username and password, fairly straightforward on the surface. But yeah, like you said, once you get into the nitty gritty, it can get a lot more complicated. A lot of people will use a product for that. And when I think about passkeys, they're like 10 times more complicated than that. And so I hope one of the takeaways from this episode is like, this technology is really cool and I want it, but it's also really hard to implement. And so I need something to help me do that, right? And like, that's why we built Passage, was to make it easier for developers. So we have APIs and SDKs, and honestly, every product out there is, you know, API first now. But I think what makes a really good tool like this is you have a really complex like technology problem that requires a lot of specialized knowledge. Maybe you have a lot of sensitive data that's processed through compliance reasons, and you have end users who like want something cohesive across the different websites. And that's a really good case to, one, build APIs and SDKs for it, build a tool to help, but also to go a step further and build like a web component, like the UI side of this as well, to help. Because, you know, there's Go libraries and Node libraries that will do WebAuthn for you. But honestly, the hard part is what we just talked about. It's the user experience. It's guiding them through the edge cases. What if they don't have access to their passkey on this device? Then what do we do? And so a lot of what Passage is like, how can you give users a cohesive, like easy experience without you having to actually make all those decisions and write all of that code yourself? We can just like give it to you. We've done all the research for Passage, and then you implement it just like you would any other library. You hit an API and we kind of handle it.
Okay. And like that's a paid product that you pay based on one of our favorite words on this podcast, MAUs, monthly active users.
Exactly. We have a nice big free tier if you want to use it on, you know, a side project or whatever. But yeah.
One other really cool thing I thought about this is I was chatting with some of the devs from 1Password, and I didn't realize, but they have open sourced all of the like low level libraries for doing this type of stuff yourself. And what I thought was so cool is it's all written, I think it's all written in Rust.
It is, yes.
And runs in the browser, or runs on the client, might be your device, via WASM, right?
Yeah. So 1Password's kind of cool. All of our client apps are built with this Rust core that handles a lot of the like hardcore cryptography that we do, the passkey libraries, and then we just build like a UI TypeScript layer on top of it, which allows us to like, you know, support a lot of different platforms at once, and provides a nice way to build some of that more complex functionality. It's really cool. So yeah, we recently open sourced the Rust libraries that do WebAuthn.
So cool. I remember, so he gave us the links, and I was looking at it. I was like, these are Rust crates. And
yes.
I was like, why is this not an NPM package? And then I was like, so this runs on like the server? He's like, no, it runs in the client and it's in Rust. I'm like, oh, that's so cool
that you're really able cool.
to run it from, you can put it on all devices. Is the 1Password, I don't know if you know this or not. I know you don't work on 1Password,
but
the 1Password app itself, is that written in like HTML, CSS, JavaScript, or is that like native on iOS and native on?
I think we have like an Electron app that works across like desktop and maybe web clients. And then we have specific like iOS and Android applications, I think.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what that was. Andrew Burkhart I was chatting with on.
Nice. Yeah.
It's funny because he said that he was involved in a lot of it. And then he sent a DM. He's like, I first got started coding listening to you and Scott. And I was like, that's amazing.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Full circle. I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I do think it's important to talk about like the role that developers play here, because obviously they are the people implementing the websites. And so, you know, they're going to do a lot of this work. And there's a lot of edge cases, and it's important to give them tools. But, you know, developers are also consumers, and typically very tech forward consumers, and often the first people to adopt these new technologies, whether it's personal life or work life. And so I think making passkeys usable for developers as just people and consumers of passkeys is really, really important, because if they can see the value in their life, then it's a very natural fit to be like, oh, this would be really great if I could get these benefits also for my apps and websites that I'm building. And if my teams could build this into our tools. And I think, like, realistically, developers are going to be the first people with significant passkey usage. And mm-hmm. so really, like, leaning into that group, like people like GitHub implementing passkeys is a huge step in that direction, I think.
Yeah, I think that's such a key point. And I'm sold. I'm ready to start shouting it. So this is, I think we need just more awareness.
I want to stop using Okta to sign into Notion every week. I haven't signed into Notion on my phone because I just can't do it.
It's just
you
too
know?
Hard.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's like impossible to. And it took me, I don't know if there was an update that I needed to get past, but I would like, it would send me to one screen, then send me to another screen. And then I just did this on loop.
You're just in the spin of forever. Oh, and then I did it the other day. I had to do it 9 times, and the 9th time it worked. And I was just like, oh, give me a passkey for this type
Please.
Of stuff. Like,
the fact that you tried 9 times is impressive. Yeah.
I probably tried more than that before I got it to work finally, but I gave up on several different occasions.
And it's always when we're like trying to jump on a call.
Yeah.
And it's like, 1 minute past the hour, and you're like, oh no.
Please. Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. Like, you know, at your work life, you probably use Okta to log into most things, right? Like I certainly do. You use Okta at 1Password. And so most of my apps are protected that way, which if I'm on my desktop is a really pretty painless process. But if you think about like small companies like Passage, we were just 10 people. We didn't have Okta. Mm-hmm. We couldn't afford that or do the setup or anything like that. And so passkeys kind of give you a middle ground between everyone just make up a password and use that for websites and SSO, which is expensive and hard to maintain. And so there's kind of this middle ground with passkeys where you can actually get better security for businesses and enterprises, maybe without having a full managed SSO.
Yeah, I was new to the entire world of Okta until March when we joined Sentry. And it was the same thing. It was just like, holy cow, this is a whole world that I did not know existed.
Yeah, I've never done any corporate stuff before.
Yeah.
Totally random thought I just had. First of all, us developers, we can't fumble this, right? Like, that's why I was hoping to have you on this podcast, because it's the exact overlap of developers are going to be using it and we're going to be implementing it. So this is my call to developers is we can't fumble this. We got to get this into all these websites.
I'm sold. Yeah.
Second, totally unrelated thing is I have an idea. I'm the merch guy for Syntax. So I just had a merch idea for Passage. Sticky notes with a private key on them. Because you know how in like corporate environments, people would write their password and stick it to their monitor?
How hilarious
would it be if you have sticky notes with a private key on it.
Yes, you're going to get hired by 1Password.
Like the world's biggest sticky note and just stick it on something.
Just a whole sweatshirt that's a sticky note.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's great.
I'm curious what you think, what does the horizon look like for this thing? Like, obviously it would be beautiful if it was tomorrow. But like, I feel like there has been major momentum in the last 6 months or so. Like you said a year and a half ago, right? You've probably been working on this for a while, but I feel like the last 6 months has been, been pretty big. Do you foresee, like, is this like a 5-year thing that you hope to get everyone using?
Yeah, I don't know about time horizon. I'm hoping sooner rather than later, but I think that's because I have been working on it for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm like, we can do it. Like, we're ready. But I do think like in the next, 1 to 2 years, we're going to hopefully see a lot of consumer applications, kind of taking off in that direction. And, I'm fairly optimistic about the technology, but I don't think we're ever going to get rid of passwords completely. I don't think that's really realistic, but I think we can say like, most of the apps I use every day are using passkeys. And then, maybe I have one or two kind of legacy things somewhere that are passwords and maybe standard multi-factor. But like the things I'm using every day, my banking apps, my Netflix, my Google, all of those are like using passkeys every day. Like within the next, certainly within 5 years, I would think that that would be the case for a lot of consumer applications. And then I also really like looking like beyond that even of like what's after passkeys, which is fun for me to think about. And I think there's like a lot of cool things that are interesting that build on this passkey technology as well. So like focusing sort of in this larger identity space of how to best give people more control over their online data and online identity, and like how to make that a little bit closer to their real person identity, but in a way that protects their privacy online and isn't just like horrifying and you're giving all your information to websites, right? So there's a lot of new like technologies coming out that are really promising in that area, like letting people prove their identity with digital passports or employee ID cards, but in a way that maintains privacy. And so I think a lot of that builds on the passkey technology. So if we can make passkey successful, that sets us up to do like a lot of other really cool things in the future.
Yeah. We just got like digital driver's license support in Colorado.
Really?
Yeah. And it is like multi-factor. They have to send you something in the mail. You have to do a whole bunch. It's been a process to get access to it, to be honest, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a headache to be one of the first ones, but I'm hoping it gets a little easier maybe. But I think that's such a cool concept that you could prove to a website that you're over 21.
Yeah.
That's all they need to know. They just need to know you're over 21. They don't need to know your specific age or your date of birth or any of that kind of stuff. And I think it's a really cool concept.
Yeah, totally.
And it only landed in iOS just over a year ago, right? Like that's probably why we're starting to hear about it now, is that like once it's in everyone's iPhone, then I think people start to really use it, or at least implement
it. Yeah, for a while it was really browser heavy and it was hard to do in like mobile applications. And so now that it's in like iOS 17, Android 14, I think have like the most like real syncable pass keys, like this in the way that we think about them now. And so it's really just those most recent versions of both platforms that really have comprehensive support. And I think that will make websites and companies more likely to start adding passkey support going forward, as it actually becomes like most of their consumers have these devices.
So the next section we have here is Supper Club questions. These are a set of questions we ask everyone. We are curious which computer and code editor you're using.
I have MacBook. The 1Password standard issue MacBook currently. And I use VS Code, though I will admit I don't write as much code as I'd like to these days, unfortunately.
Well, and enough to get on this podcast, because
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Seeing as this stuff does feel like it's super cutting edge, and you were obviously very early on this stuff, where do you go to stay up to date?
Yeah, there's a couple really good resources, things that I would actually recommend to developers listening. There's a site called passkeys.dev that the FIDO Alliance keeps up to date, mainly headed by Tim Capali from Microsoft. And it's a lot of really like a collection of resources basically for developers. It includes things like, what does browser and platform support look like across all the different browsers? And like, what libraries can I use to go implement this? And I think especially if you're looking to build from scratch, it's a really good place to start to like understand like fundamentally what's going on behind the scenes and like, how am I going to make this happen? The FIDO Alliance also puts out a lot of other good resources that really range in level from like pretty high level to pretty technical. And so I would really recommend like checking out the stuff that they put out. A lot of good UX guidelines. That's a big area they focus on. Just a lot of really interesting stuff. And so that's a big area for me. 1Password participates in a lot of the FIDO Alliance work. And so that's kind of a fun way to like really be on the cutting edge of new stuff that's coming out.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting, it's not a working group. I guess it is. Like it's a W3C. Is that who's?
So the specifications are W3C. The FIDO Alliance is just like an industry group that's, their mission is like to bring passwordless authentication to the world. And so they have a number of different working groups that focus on different things. One of the small groups within the FIDO works on passkeys.dev. Like that's kind of their mission, is like really focused on developers and developer adoption. There's other groups that are focused on like enterprise deployments or consumer deployments or all sorts of different things. But really anything related to passkeys or hardware keys or web authent in general kind of fits under the FIDO Alliance's umbrella.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a really cool organization. If you haven't heard of it, I would recommend checking it out.
Well, this episode's been really illuminating to me. I'm like, I went from like being kind of, it's a big mystery to now I'm very excited about passkeys. So thank you, Anna. I think this has been incredible. I think a lot of people are really going to like it. Before we get out of here, do you have any sick picks and shameless plugs for us today?
Ooh, I do. Okay. I love playing board games. That's one of the things I do a lot in my free time. And so the most recent game I discovered that I'd highly recommend is called Cascadia. It's a tile-based game. It's really beautiful. which I care a lot about in a game. I realize not everyone does, but I love a beautiful game. It's really easy to learn, lots of cool strategies and things to think about. Christmas is coming up. It's a fun gift. But if you're into board games, I highly recommend it. It's really fun.
Cool. Yeah.
And then shameless plug is really just Passage. Like, you are all developers, and so I would love for people to come try it out. We'll give you 1,000 users for free. You can try it out, join our Discord, give us feedback. Like, we're building this for developers, and we want it to be as easy to use as, you know, I claim that it is. And so we would really appreciate people trying it out and giving us feedback.
Cool. Man, this Cascadia looks pretty sweet, because it kind of looks, obviously with the tiles, it looks kind of like Catanish, but like, your goals are to attract wildlife and build nature corridors. That's like way better than conquering the world.
Exactly. Right. It's so pretty. I love it. I love any game that's about animals, like Wingspan. It's just like my favorite type of game.
Oh, that's fun.
But I love it. It's a fun game.
Cool. Yeah, I'll check this out.
All right. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.